Welcome to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn on Magic 98.3. April is Jazz Appreciation Month, and a place where jazz is being celebrated, played, jammed to, danced to, and enjoyed every week is New Brunswick. And who's helping make jazz noteworthy in New Brunswick? It's the New Brunswick Jazz Project, and founders Virginia DeBerry, Jimmy Lenahan, and Mike Tublin join us to talk jazz in Central Jersey. Thank you all for being here. I so appreciate it.
Thank you for having us, Maggie.
Great to be here.
All right, now let's talk about this New Brunswick Jazz Project. How did you get started, and how long ago? How long has this been around?
We got started in 2010, and Mike and Jimmy and I were kind of regulars on the New Brunswick nightlife scene. And one of the things that we realized was that there wasn't any live jazz in New Brunswick. There was all kinds of other music, but there wasn't music for grown-ups. And, you know, New Brunswick thinks that it's like a really great, hip, cool, cultural city, and it's got wonderful theaters, and we've got an art museum, and fabulous restaurants, but the one thing New Brunswick didn't have was regular jazz. And a city cannot be cool if it doesn't have jazz.
Now, how did the three of you come to this conclusion, though? Were you sitting down one night enjoying music somewhere in New Brunswick and said, wait a second now, there's a big piece missing in this puzzle? How did this all come about, this connection with the three of you?
Virginia had talked a little bit about our love of jazz, and Michael was a new arrival in town at the time, and he was a big fan of all sorts of music, including jazz. And we had some connections at Mason Gross, at the School of Music, the School of Jazz there. And we had in the past, New Brunswick had spotty performances of jazz. And, you know, we said there's an opening here. And and some of us started from a selfish point of view. We wanted to enjoy jazz
We wanted the entertainment we wanted.
And I'm sure many people are happy now that you were selfish about this. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, so we approached some of our contacts in the Mason Gross, and approached some of our contacts in the local bar scene that we were familiar with and known in, and it grew from that. Basically, the three of us decided, hey, let's give this a shot. Let's try it out for at least a year. We committed to a year to get it off the ground. And we approached some of the local restaurants, and that's how it started.
The biggest problem.
Well, you make it sound very easy, Virginia. I know it wasn't that
it
easy.
It wasn't. Yeah, and the biggest problem with starting anything is being consistent. And we knew that that was going to be the key to our being successful. And in the beginning, there were nights when it would be Mike and me and Jimmy and the band and the bartender. And
there was always an audience of three, though. always.
And the music would be so fantastic. And at the end of the night, we would hug each other and vow to come back the next week and do it again. And we really believed, like in the Field of Dreams, that if we built it, they would come. We just had to not give up after the first few months. We had to stick with it. And our belief that people would come, despite the fact that people said, folks aren't going to come for jazz in New Brunswick. They're just not going to do it. It's too close to New York, or we tried jazz. It doesn't work. And we just felt like we had something else that we could offer to make it work. And I think part of our formula is that we attend every event. And we don't just put on a show and leave it to the audience. We are a part of the evening. So the three of us are there. And over the last 5 years, we have developed relationships with the venue and the staff. We have relationships with the musicians. And we have a relationship with our audience. And it's that that's come together. We've created a community around this music. And we have had engagements and weddings, and it has been extraordinary what has happened out of this community.
How the music has grown
into
a really supportive social community. And Mike, what did you think when you sat down and the three of you were hashing this out, thinking about it 5 years later? Did you ever expect it would grow to the point it's grown now?
Well, not really, because when we started, not one of us has any musical ability or in the entertainment field besides Virginia being a writer. We had no experience with working with musicians, working with the restaurants, and booking this. And so we've learned as we've grown how to manage this whole ensemble, and it's pretty amazing that we've gotten to this level
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we've had Grammy winners. You can see a Grammy winner in New Brunswick for free.
Okay, yeah. That's pretty awesome. I mean, for the three of you to look at that and think, we came from this conversation and we've built this up now to the point where folks can come out and enjoy this every week. Every week there's great
every
jazz
week
in New Brunswick.
There's great live free jazz in New Brunswick.
Say that again, because that's worth repeating.
Every week there is great live free jazz in New Brunswick. Same musicians that you would go to New York to see, that you would, somebody was saying last night, we had the Captain Black Big Band at the Hyatt, and someone was saying that they wanted to go and see them someplace, but there was a $20 cover and a $20 minimum per set. And they had two sets last night at the Hyatt for no dollars, $0.
That's something everyone can afford.
Yes.
And I bet, Jimmy, do you find that when people hear about this or just happen to stumble in it, maybe they're in New Brunswick going out to eat and they come across this, what is the feeling that you're getting from the public as this has grown the past 5 years and the reaction? I bet you have a lot of recruits who just kind of stumble in. Yeah. And you see them a lot after that.
Some of it that strikes me is how surprised people are at the level of quality of the artists that we bring and the quality of the performances. And live jazz, you know, people, as Virginia said, you pay a lot to go to New York City. People come from all over the world to watch and pay for, you know, this level of jazz. And we have it here in our community. And those nights where where it really works, where the audience gets engaged and where the live music and the artists play off of each other, really is something to be experienced. And when people get that, they'll come back and they will show their appreciation by verbally and other ways, just supporting us. And that in itself is a gratification.
Yeah, people who like this music, if they come once, they'll come again.
And I want you to describe, the rest of you, to describe that feeling of when live jazz is playing and the audience is involved and really where you go with that music. Every time you listen to jazz, you do go somewhere else, don't you? Even as
each
just
experience
a listener.
Is singular. It never happens the same way twice. You can see the same band playing the same song two nights in a row, and it will sound completely different. And that's magical when it happens.
And you find the same thing, Michael? Absolutely.
It's exhilarating because you can just, you see the musicians talking, you know, their instruments are talking to each other, and they go in this conversation, and then they just sweep the crowd in, and we go on a magical ride, and it's incredible.
You know, there's a lot of talk about being present, being in the present, and this is very in vogue now, but I think the jazz folks have had this all the time with the music. You are really in the present when you are listening and taking part in jazz.
And especially in an intimate environment in where there's 30, 40, 50 people perhaps, and that's it. It's not where you're at a concert with 20,000 or 10,000 where the music is pretty much already been recorded and the performance is recorded and choreographed to the nth degree. This is raw, this is live, and this is, as Mike says, exhilarating.
And this is, I think the way that we are doing it is the way that jazz was meant to be experienced and appreciated. One of the things that's happened, especially in the last two decades, is that jazz has become something that people think and associate with a festival that happens once a year, or that it's only this thing that happens in New York, and you have to save up your money, and you go into New York, and you go to the Blue Note, or you go to Dizzy's, and you spend $500, and that's what it is. But jazz didn't start out that way. Jazz was music for people, and for the people where they were. Every famous jazz musician started in their hometown, whether it was Peoria or some little dried-up town in some part of a state you've never been to before. That's where they started playing. They played in kitchens. They played in little dive bars. They played in basements. And people came to hear the music. And that's how jazz caught on and grew to spread across the nation and become America's original art form. Our contribution to the world's culture is jazz.
That's a wonderful thing. I'm so happy you brought that up. And you look, you know, I think you've heard that there's been a death knell for jazz. But that's, it seems, no, there hasn't been, that there is really a resurgence lately. in New Brunswick, in different places. Do you see that, the three of you?
We do. We see on Tuesday nights at Tumulty's Pub, we call it our Emerging Artist Series, and it's mostly for the younger cats and the college students, and it amazes me of how many of these young students come in and play. We had a 13-year-old girl come and sing 2-3 weeks ago. Her name is Alexis Morast. You will know it.
Remember
that name. This girl is going to be famous.
Extraordinary.
Extraordinary.
And how wonderful for a 13-year-old to have a place to go locally to go and sing and join in. She must be overjoyed to
and
have
so
found
And so are her
you.
Parents. It was wonderful.
She found her tribe, right? And that's part of it, is finding your tribe.
Right. And to the point of jazz being alive or dead, it's alive, and maybe it's niche. Maybe it's not, on the most popular on YouTube or wherever, but it's a niche market, and it's a community art form. And so as long as it's alive in New Brunswick and other cities, then the music lives.
I have a friend who says that jazz is like gourmet food, and everybody doesn't appreciate the particular kinds of things that are considered delicacies in gourmet food. So you have a particular audience that wants that kind of musical experience. And there is nothing like being in the room with live music. It makes your life better. People come and they say, I didn't really feel like coming out tonight, but I'm so glad I did because now I feel better. I had a really crappy day, but now I feel better. Because you can't not be in that space and be present and feel that music and that energy and not leave feeling better. It's not possible.
Right. You definitely feel the energy in the room and the change. And I find it interesting that the three of you said none of you play instruments, or I'm going to start with Mike.
I'm musically challenged. I took piano lessons for 3 years, and some people have it and some don't. I just don't. I can appreciate it to the nth degree, but musically, I have none.
And what led you to jazz then? What, from you were young or when you got older?
My parents listened to all types of music, so I've been exposed to everything. I probably like rock and roll a little more, but when we discussed about doing the jazz really works to have it in a nice restaurant or in a hotel. It's just a great business model for us. So.
Right, right. And Virginia, how about you?
Well, I grew up surrounded by music. My mother was a music major in college and wanted to be an opera singer way back in the 40s. So I was surrounded by all kinds of music, but my parents went out regularly to hear jazz. I thought that that was old people's music because in my mind, that's what it was.
And I think there's a little bit of a prejudice with that, with some people still, a little bit. It's changing.
It's changing. Yes. It's changing. And then in high school, I had a friend who grew up in Newport, Rhode Island, and she was a big jazz festival goer, and she convinced me that jazz was cool. And it was the peer influence. Somebody who was 15 like me thought jazz was cool, and I started to think, well, maybe it is. And I still think it's cool.
And Jimmy, how about you? How about all the jazz in Ireland? I want to hear about
Ireland.
This.
Well,
yes.
Irish, traditional music was more was my earlier influence, and then rock and roll, of course, and then classical. So I was well into my 30s before I found jazz and found how much it was like classical in some ways, but how much it was like even Irish traditional music, where the improvisation was there.
Absolutely.
And I was at the Blue Note one night and saw some leading people, and I was smitten in a heartbeat.
So. You were hooked, and your life was changed
and
forever,
my life
all
was changed.
Of you.
Absolutely. As Mike says, none of us were in the business, so I was engineering is my business, and to change from engineering to producing or presenting jazz, it's just been a eye opener for me and an addition to my life.
And a true joy to all of you. It seems a true joy to all of your
lives.
It
makes us so happy. Now, instead of hugging at the end of the night and promising to come back next week, now we hug each other and we say, we did this.
And a lot of people are very happy about that. You're listening to Ad Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn on Magic 98.3. And we're talking with the founders of the New Brunswick Jazz Project, Michael Tublin, Virginia DeBerry, and Jimmy Lenihan. And 5 years in,
Yes.
Can't believe it's probably flown 5 years. You just had a big celebration of your 5 years.
We did. We had a big celebration at the Hyatt. We had a big band. We had the mayor of New Brunswick presented us with a proclamation. We got one from the state. And I was lucky enough to, on behalf of the New Brunswick Jazz Project, receive a Jazz Hero Award from the Jazz Journalists Association.
Excellent.
For what we are doing here with live jazz in New Brunswick. And no, we didn't expect that this is where we'd be in 5 years, but who knows what it'll be by 10.
Absolutely, to be recognized by all those people. And to have now 5 years in, is it getting a little easier maybe to get some of the musicians in from the city? What was it like in the beginning? I know you said you had connections.
Well, we had our musical advisor at the beginning was Ralph Bowen, who's a Mason Gross professor and a world-renowned saxophone player.
Yeah, mind-blowing, pun intended.
And he told us at the beginning, he goes, the easiest part will be the musicians.
Really?
Because
okay.
Once they sort of get word about us, you'll be getting, you know, instead of us asking, we're getting now 50 to 60 solicitations for them to perform at one of our events.
Fantastic.
This is every month. And these are professional working musicians. And I was at the doctor a couple of months ago, and he said, I've got some doctor friends that play jazz. Should I put them in touch with you? I said, no. we're not doing that kind of jazz. These aren't hobbyists. These are professional working musicians. And they appreciate what we are doing. We're giving them a space to play. We're providing them with an audience who is really appreciative of what they are doing. And they recognize that the only way jazz is going to survive is on a community level.
And do they find it a little freeing maybe sometimes to come to New Brunswick? Maybe do they try out some things that maybe they wouldn't try out in the city?
Absolutely, yes.
Do you find that?
They'll come and often we'll get names that perhaps are a little above our pay grade, but they'll come to if they have a new CD, if they have a new piece that they want to work with, and they'll come and they'll be happy to perform for us on a Thursday night for something that they're going to do either on the road or in abroad or in New York at the weekend. So
it
works for both parties, yes. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're happy to be their rehearsal space. And the other wonderful thing is that so many of the jazz musicians in New York actually live in New Jersey.
Oh, that's a very yes.
So we are in many ways, although mileage-wise we may be further away from them than New York. We're easier.
The traffic is better.
The traffic is better. The parking is easy. There's no tolls. It's easy.
And they know they're going to have an extremely – well, they always have a supportive, you know, the
but
people
they know
you're
they're
talking
have
about.
A good
but
time.
It's
they're
knowing
have a good
that
audience.
You're going to have a good time in a good audience and being in a smaller space sometimes.
Yeah. Yes, and we make an extra effort to make sure that they're treated well and they get fed properly and that, you know.
Things are important.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. They definitely count.
As Mike said, Ralph, our musical advisor in the early day, Ralph Bowen, advised us early, so be sure and feed them well. Yeah, that's one of the things. And small things like that make a difference.
Yeah, and it is important. I mean, especially for people who are on the road, who are all over the place, a little TLC can go a long
yes,
way.
Well, yes, and we try to be very respectful of them. We recognize that their talent is what keeps us going, and we don't want them to feel like they're there just working for us and we're paying them, so you have to do what we say. We're very respectful of what they need and try to accommodate whatever it is we can.
And now let's do a little name dropping. Let's let people know who some of these people are who are coming to New Brunswick so they, if they haven't been, they know what they're missing.
Last night, Oren Evans and his big band, Mark Gross for our
anniversary, jazz organist Akiko Suruga. We've had our Grammy Award winner Arturo O'Farrell a number of times. We've had Winard Harper. We have had
Conrad Herwig.
Yeah, Grammy nominated Conrad. Grammy nominated Rosanna Vitro.
Okay, so now you have people listening saying, how did I miss out? Like, why am I not in New Brunswick? When is this?
And that's correct.
What? When?
Why
when?
Are you not in New Brunswick?
Why are you not in New Brunswick?
And you have Thursday night.
Okay, so that's you have emerging artists on
Tuesday
nights. And then you have heavy hitters coming in on Thursday
Thursdays.
Nights
yes.
mainly, right? So do people have to make reservations in advance? What are the restaurants you're using? Let's give some of the actual details so we can get folks, on board.
Our full schedule is on our website, which is nbjp.org, and that's up to date, and that'll list all our upcoming events for the next 6-8 weeks.
Wow. Okay.
And we also have an email list that people can sign up for via our website. You get an email every Tuesday outlining what's happening that week and giving you a little biographical information and links to the musicians that are performing. And we just have a great way of keeping in touch with everybody.
But right.
Tuesdays, we are at Tumulty's.
Tuesdays at Tumulty's. Some Wednesdays at the Hyatt. Every Thursday at Hotoke, the first Friday of the month at Destination Dogs. We're on Facebook. As Regina said, she tweets.
Right. Your Facebook page is amazing. I mean, that's really a great place to get.
We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. You can't avoid us. If you Google jazz and New Brunswick, you can't not find us.
And this is every week. This every single week.
Every single week.
Now, what have you found from the response of people in New Brunswick, of people who've lived in New Brunswick for years, and all of a sudden, for the past 5 years, this is available all the time?
Well, this is my next-door neighbor. They used to go to the city weekly to see jazz.
Right.
And they didn't know anything about what we were doing. Now, they're every week, they're out 2 to 3 nights with us.
And happy as can be.
Happy as can be. They couldn't be more excited. They can walk to the...
Well, and that's the benefit. And it really is the walking, the parking, the easy in and out of New Brunswick.
It's so much easier than the city.
Yes.
And, you know, I used to live in New York. I moved here from the city. So I absolutely have a place in my heart for New York. But sometimes things are just harder there than they need to be. And jazz is already having a hard enough time. We want to make it accessible and available, and we want more and more people to understand how important this music is to our American culture. The rest of the world gets it.
That is such a good point, and we should talk about what's going on, say, in Ireland with jazz. I mean, Europeans understand and love jazz.
Yes.
Love it. So what's going on?
Well,
I'm going to the
Ireland
over here.
Okay, Ireland has perhaps, again, a niche market in jazz, but in Dublin and Belfast and Limerick, there are clubs that you can see. And again, it's local and it's live. And we recently, last year, went to Belfast on a cultural exchange and visited 4 or 5 different clubs. And it's wonderful to see that, you know, driving, and they want to come over here and we want to go there. So
excellent.
Down the road, we have some plans perhaps to do some exchanges.
More people from Europe into New Brunswick.
Yes, and the musicians that we work with travel all the time. They are on the road. They may not be the band leader, but they're sidemen, and they're in Russia, they're in Paris, they're in Italy, they're in the Philippines, they're in Japan, they're in China. All of the time. We can look on Facebook at any given moment and find 6 or 8 of our favorite jazz cats someplace else in the world. And then they come back and they play in New Brunswick.
And life is good. Now, I want to bring up, because you brought up earlier in the interview about Mason Gross and jazz and the help they gave some of the professors in the beginning. There's a little hotbed of jazz going over at Mason Gross, isn't there? I mean, that's really happening in New Brunswick at Rutgers.
Yes, and many of the professors are world-class, world-renowned jazz musicians who perform everywhere, and they teach right here in New Brunswick, and they are helping to cultivate a new generation of jazz musicians. And that's another thing that's vital. It not only needs to be local, we need to keep encouraging young people to explore this area of music that is actually played with real live instruments, not just digital tones.
Right, and it does seem that the professors, and not just professors, but people who play jazz, so many of them seem so passionate about passing this on to the younger generation.
Absolutely. And we take that as part of our mission, too. And specifically, our Tuesday nights for the emerging artists is a platform for the young guys to be able to play. And, you know, while they learn a lot of theory and a lot of technique during their college day, to sit in and to perform and to lead in a real bar environment or a real club environment, we feel is a great experience for them. And
anyone can come from the 13-year-old. Wait, what was her name again?
Alexis Morast.
Well, you're going to remember that name. But so anyone can come, really, and join in.
Yes, because after the performance is from 8 to 9, and then at 9:30 we have an open jam session. And we've had a 10-year-old trumpet player, and we've had a 75-year-old drummer. It's an open jam. Anybody can come on a Tuesday night to Maltese and join in the
and
jam
how
session.
Joyful is watching from the 10-year-old to the 75-year-old? That must be... I wish I could play.
It's fantastic. And then sometimes they'll have one of the professors will show up. And so for the students, it's incredible if one of them comes in and just...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, 5 years, what do you see for the New Brunswick Jazz Project going forward? Because this is a big anniversary to celebrate this. Where do you all see where it's going?
We've touched on the education, which is core to our next 5 years. And also reaching out to the healthcare community to promote jazz as a healing and as a part of the community, I think will be part of our mission.
Yeah,
yes,
and it is.
As we have entered our sixth year, we are now an official not-for-profit 501c3, so we can hopefully start to explore areas for funding, because this has been mostly self-funded. So to explore areas for funding that will allow us to have outreach programs with the schools and some other organizations, and to be able to sustain what we are doing without as much financial pain as there has been in the first 5 years is our main goal.
That's a very important goal, because to keep it going, you need money.
Yes,
and that's
we
the
need
bottom
money.
Line. And can people contribute? Can
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely.
Okay, so
yes.
How could they do that?
There's a link on our website. It says support us, and you click there, and you go straight to PayPal, and you can make a donation that way, or you can send us a check to the New Brunswick Jazz Project, 8 Hiram Square, New Brunswick, New Jersey, 08901.
Excellent, because really it does take money to do this. I mean, you have passion. You've put a lot of your lifetime into it, but you don't do this full time.
No, we have
other
jobs.
So what do you all do full time? I mean, this alone
this
sounds
hobby.
Like a full time job. This is a heck of a hobby.
It is.
So I have to ask, what do you do full time? It must be. And how do you juggle? I want the key to this.
I'm an employee of the city of New Brunswick. I'm director of the Sister Cities program.
Excellent. Excellent. Virginia?
I am a novelist. I have been writing books since 1989.
Fabulous. And any about jazz?
Not yet.
All right, tell us where we can find your books.
I have 7 published novels. And, you know, once again, Amazon, you just put in Virginia DeBerry. I write with my best friend, Donna Grant. We have been a writing team successfully for more than 25 years.
Fabulous. And that alone is so difficult that... Good for you.
Obviously, I like to choose things that are hard to do.
Yeah, obviously. And Jimmy, how about you?
Engineering is my field. I have a small manufacturing business in Middlesexborough, and we make valves for food and pharmaceutical industries.
All right. So you're all kept very busy during the day, but then at night, the jazz comes out to play.
Yes, it does.
All right. So again, coming up maybe in May, if you want to just give a promo of maybe what's coming on your calendar or how you can find it. You can find it on the Facebook if I can ask you to give that back out again.
You can find it on Facebook. You can find it on the web at nbjp.org. Starting out in May, we have trombonist Stafford Hunter on May 7th. We have vocalist Chris McNulty on May 13th at the Hyatt celebrating the release of her new CD, Eternal. And on May 14th, we have Ralph Peterson, who was a drummer with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, who went to school at Rutgers, and he will be returning to New Brunswick on Thursday, May 14th. And all the rest can be found on the web at nbjp.org.
All right. So if you need to, you know, add a little jazz to your life, there is no reason now that you can't do it, because it's here in New Brunswick and you can really take advantage of it and enjoy it. And thank you, the three of you, for coming here and sharing all about the New Brunswick Jazz
thank
Project.
You.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Please come out and join our community.
It sounds awesome. All right. You've been listening to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glenn on Magic 98.3. Missed a show? Listen online or download episodes at magic983.com.